each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon and welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And it's my privilege to be sitting in here today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have a guest with me today, as I do most every Monday. We're going to be kind of taking a slight turn away from some of the things we normally discuss here on Winds. And we're going to be talking about the scary world of finance. In particular, we're going to talk about Bitcoin and what it is and why it's going to create possible havoc in our current economic system. And so because I don't know the slightest thing about this, I invited my friend, Bill Ulivieri from Cenacle Capital Management in Glenview. He is an investment advisor. He's also a very devout and serious Catholic, so he brings to all of his work in the investment industry really a very beautiful and holistic Catholic perspective on investing and on how the best way to use the resources that God has given to each of us. But his most important job is being a husband and a father.
Amen to that.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. And thank you for being here with us again. Bill is a friend of the show, as I like to say. He's been here with us before. So, Bill, tell me the ages of your kids again. Where do you don't have any Santa Claus believers on your...
No. Yeah. I have four children. I have three girls and one boy.
Right.
The girls are ages 28, 27, 19, and my son is 17.
Okay. So you're not quite an empty nester yet.
But... No. And we have two grandchildren right now.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, very
Javier,
nice.
Age three, and Stella, who's about 8 months.
Oh, so wonderful. So you do have a little person who believes in Santa.
A little
in
bit,
house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It
That's
helps
beautiful.
Keep the house young again.
No, isn't it nice? Yeah. Because then when you have that, my youngest is 9, and this may be the last year for Santa. So she is becoming exceedingly suspicious of everything that's going on. She's starting to put two and two together. So this might be our last year in that, which makes me sad, you know.
Part of fun when we were raising a family was just doing these little things to perpetuate the belief in Santa Claus.
Right.
I remember taking my bedroom slippers and pushing them on the sand of this fireplace that we had.
Uh-huh.
It was a glass bottom with a sand. And they thought that Santa Claus actually shimmied down through this very narrow tube.
Uh-huh.
And you could see his footprints in the fireplace.
Wow.
And
see,
so that, yeah. I got a lot of mileage out of that
Oh,
one.
My God. You know, and those are like memories that kids have. And, you know, it's funny because at the time when you're doing it as a parent, you're thinking, you know, why am I spending this time? It's 2 a.m. I just want to go to sleep. Why am I doing this?
Right.
And then when one of them says to you years later, wow, I remember the time that you did X, Y, and Z. You know, mm-hmm. There was one year we were a little tight on cash, and you'll appreciate this as an investment person. So the girls already had a couple of American dolls. I think each mm-hmm. of them, you know, from grandma and grandpa and their aunts and uncles, each had two dolls. But there was no way I could afford to do new dolls. So I just went to the American Girl store. I got their hair done. I had dolls' hair done, but that only cost $7 or $8.
Mm-hmm.
I got them each a new inexpensive outfit. I lined them up on the couch on Christmas morning, all the dolls. You would have thought I'd bought them four new dolls.
Right.
They still remember that. They're like, they said it was like walking into the American Girl doll store. So
my wife, Evie, grew up with a family of seven
uh-huh.
In a two-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath
wow.
house. So for her, they remember getting stockings full of like black cans of black olives and like other kind of treats. And when I first met my wife, I'm like, black olives for the stocking stuffer?
Yeah.
But I tell you, the kids, they go crazy if we don't supply that to them.
The black
them
olives.
They,
yeah, we had the oranges and the walnuts. That was always a big thing, you know. And then, you know, I found out that there were other kids who got like M&Ms, and I felt so gypped. I'm like, what is this about? Well, did you have a good weekend? Did you do your are you done with your Christmas shopping? Or
we have a little bit more to do.
Do you?
Yeah. We don't try to impress the kids with massive gifts anymore. We just get what they need and just spend time together.
Well,
as
you
family.
Know what I was saying to my husband? I'm like, you know, when they were littler, I remember like we would go to Toys R Us with say $200 and come out with a huge cart full of toys. You know, now we go to the Apple Store with $1,000 and come out with a tiny bag, and that's like, you know, that's Christmas. I'm thinking, where did this go? You know, I used to get so much mileage out of $200, but we did something really nice this weekend. We've been doing this for a number of years. My girls are involved with a Catholic lay ecclesial movement called the Focolari, and they have a wonderful program for children called the GEN, which is kind of short for the New Generation of Saints. And so years and years ago, the Focolari movement's founder, Kara Lubick, she was, you know, was walking through some beautiful Christmas shopping mall in Austria or something, and everything looked gorgeous and, you know, decorations and toys and everything. But she said as she walked through the streets, and she said it was like spectacular, she saw not one image of the Christ child anywhere. And this was like in Salzburg or something like that. So the children of the Focolari, kind of working with her, came up with this project they call the Baby Jesus Project. And they take these beautiful, the kids actually make these, you know, kind of inexpensive, but plaster figurines of the Christ child. Mm-hmm. And they put them in little straw baskets with straw. And then wrap them up with a little, just a little inspirational note that goes with it, explaining what they're doing. And so it was Baby Jesus Project Saturday, this past Saturday. So literally from the shopping centers from Rome and Paris to places in Africa and in South America and in Chicago and Dallas and New York, the kids from the Focolari go out into whatever the major shopping area is for that part of the world and give out Christ child figurines. So
that's
we
terrific.
Did. Yeah, it is a great, but I tell you, it's good and it's bad, because you'll either have people who are, you know, like the lovely women who would come up from Southern Indiana on these shopping tour buses, you know, who are like to the kids, oh, bless your heart, here's $20. And let me, you know, we don't sell them, but people often will leave a donation. But to people who are like literally like yell at the kids, which I never get somebody who looks at a 7-year-old and yells at them because they're trying to hand them a baby Jesus at Christmas time. That has always escaped me. But that was our little contribution, I feel, to kind of putting Christ back, and not so much into Christmas, but into Christmas shopping, to realize that, you know.
Well, everyone has to take just those few minutes alone from the craziness of the schedule of family and really try to bring that into your own heart, into your family. I know that, you know, our Pope John Paul II, St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, was very fond of entering into the scene of the Nativity.
Yes, yes.
So John Paul II was kind of caught in Vatican City at night walking through the figurines, and we have a beautiful nativity scene on our dresser in the more like an armoire in the front room. But to take 5 minutes out and just look at it, I mean, it's like an act of heroism these days.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, it is, like, to me, it was so incredible. But like in this changing world where there would actually be some like hostility towards Christ being present at Christmas. And, you know, I think this is part of the I don't want to say it's like an attack on Christmas, but this is really more culturally pervasive, that we're seeing that people don't want religion in the public square. And I think we're and religious people practicing their religion in the public square, you know, in a country that where tolerance is sort of the new big buzzword, and being tolerant and being inclusive, you know, as long as it's not a certain kind of Christianity that's going to be present, then people are okay with the tolerance and the inclusivity.
Sure.
And I think this is why we're seeing so many of these cases that involve, you know, religious liberty issues, whether it's the evangelical Christian man who owned the bakery, who didn't want to participate in a same-sex wedding, to the florist, to other people who really when, like you, and this is why I'm always so intrigued by your insights into financial issues, you really bring your faith life into your workplace. And I know that was something St. Jose Maria was,
correct.
It's sort of one of his charisms, right? That your work,
this is our vocation. This
correct.
Is where God has me, and I have to find Christ in my work or I'm not going to find him.
Right. Well, that, I mean, that's a very beautiful way to look at it. And again, listeners, I would, if you have not read St. Jose Maria's, reflections on. I've read about them in like the context of saying the Joyful Mysteries of the Rosary, where he'll talk about that mm-hmm. scene, and you really feel almost like you're present there, you know. And it's a great little meditation to do before Christmas, because you know what? Before you know it, this week is gone.
Yes.
So it's this beautiful last week of Advent, and because we lose sort of a week of Advent this year because of Christmas falling so close to the fourth Sunday of Advent, they're back to back this year. You almost lose like an additional week of really being able to enter into that.
So it's going by faster than we can possibly
imagine.
Oh,
my goodness. Yes. And listeners, for those of you who were wondering, yes, you do have to go to Mass twice. You have to go. You can go Saturday night for Sunday and Sunday night for Monday, but there's two separate obligations, and you can't just go Sunday night and have them count for both. So as Bill, as you know, one of my vocations is reminding people about Holy Days of Obligations.
Yes, and thank you for that.
It
comes in handy.
Yes, I know. And people, you know, it's so funny. We were at a Christmas party on Saturday night, and someone who very nice attorney, he works for the public defender, actually, is a lovely man, lovely mm-hmm. family. And he never posts on Facebook, so I guess I knew we were friends on Facebook, but I hadn't remembered that. And he came right up to me. He said, "Oh, I just love your Holy Day of Obligation posts on Facebook. Thank you so much for doing that." So that was kind of funny. I thought, wow, I guess, you know, he said, "Oh, I share it and I tell my family."
Right.
And so it was nice to get that feedback,
because
sometimes I wonder if I sound like, you know, the old church lady from Facebook, or not from Facebook, from Saturday Night Live. Someday. So anyway, so Bill.
Yes.
So speaking of vocations and work, part of your what you are have become sort of an expert on, and I follow you on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So this is how I knew I could reach out to you. Is a new I'm not even sure what to call it, a new thing for lack of a better adjective. You will clarify what it is, which is Bitcoin. And I keep seeing, you know, I get the Wall Street Journal and, you know, I read the New York Times and stuff. So I keep seeing these stories about Bitcoin, and I am not ashamed to admit I don't have the slightest idea what it is, even though I've read some stories.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was hoping, since this does seem to be such a timely change in the financial systems, if you could help our listeners and myself learn more about Bitcoin, and then there's something else associated with it called blockchain,
yes.
you were telling me, what it is, you know, how it works, and why it's important that we at least kind of have a working knowledge about it. So
I'll do my very best.
Okay,
it's a piece of new technology, and sometimes when we're explaining technology, we have a dictionary that actually has the same word, but perhaps two different definitions. So you're just going to have to bear with me when we talk about Bitcoins.
Okay. So, all right. So let's start with just we'll do the sort of very simple, maybe your elevator speech about mm-hmm. Bitcoin, and then I think it's probably going to be time to go to a break, and then when we come back,
sure.
we can get into some more substantive discussion. So. What is Bitcoin? I know it is a thing, but
yes.
tell me, like, if you had 10 seconds on the elevator with somebody, how would you, what would be your working definition?
I would say Bitcoin is a revolutionary new piece of technology.
It's technology. It's technology and not a piece of currency?
It acts like a currency.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay, so it's a digital currency. It was designed to be digital or electronic person-to-person cash, right,
okay.
electronically. And it really is a new way of sending payments over the internet. So
okay.
just like you can send a text message to a friend or an email to a friend, you can
okay.
now send money or send value, anything of value, just as easy. So it's the new evolution of money is really, in essence, what Bitcoin is.
Okay. So let's say, all right, Mary is selling a widget. I have a widget I want to sell to you, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to use Bitcoin to sell it. You want to pay me for
yes.
my widget in Bitcoin.
Yes.
How would that work?
So with Bitcoin, you have to download an app on your phone.
Okay.
Or you have to register through the internet. There are several websites that people use, several different applications people can download on their iPhone or their Android phone. And what that does is it permits you, that's the gateway into the Bitcoin network. Because
okay.
I said it was technology.
Right.
So for people who are in IT, they understand that when they send a file from one place to another, they use something called an internet protocol, a protocol being like
right.
FTP.
Right.
Right. Or when you go on the World Wide Web, you use WWW or HTTP. That
right.
defines the type of technology protocol. The conversation between two computers.
Okay.
So Bitcoin has its own internet protocol, and it permits two people to send money almost instantaneously anywhere in the world. from Alaska to Antarctica, from Maine to Mozambique, almost instantaneously for virtually no fee, without the need of an intermediary or a bank.
Okay.
So let me give you an example. In 2013, I gave a week-long presentation at the London Stock Exchange.
Okay.
And when they paid me for my fee at the end of the 5 days, the London Stock Exchange sent my payment for my speaking fee to the Bank of England. Bank of England sent it to HSBC Bank. HSBC fired it across the ocean to the Bank of New York. Bank of New York sent that wire transfer to my local community bank.
Okay.
And after 30 years of doing business with the bank, they didn't know who I was. So they kicked back the whole thing. It took me 23 days to get paid from a country that we've been doing business with for the roughly 250 years.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And along the way, everybody took a little piece of the action. Hmm. Bitcoin permits you to send. I could have had my payment before I even left the lobby of the building in London, because it's a direct person-to-person payment. It's as if they would have handed me a bag of cash, but really it's an electronic payment that arrives on my phone.
Okay. All right. And so, all right. So then how, I'm trying to use an analogy that some of our listeners would be able to understand. So how would it be any different than, say, Western Union? I remember my parents are both from Europe, and occasionally my father would wire money to his sister, or my grandparents there would wire some money to us. How is it different from wiring funds?
Because Western Union, PayPal, the banking system, Visa, MasterCard, those are all centralized computer databases that keep track of the debits and the credits. It's a centralized system.
Okay.
Bitcoin is completely decentralized. It's distributed.
Okay.
It's the person who's responsible for updating the debits and the credits really happen on an electronic ledger, really not that different than a bank, except it's done by hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands of volunteers that provide a network system, the infrastructure.
Okay.
So we don't rely on the Federal Reserve. We don't rely on Harris Bank or BMO or whatever bank. I'm just picking names off the top of my head.
Right.
But we don't need a trusted intermediary anymore to charge us a fee in order to send money person to person.
Okay. All right. So there's no – so, for example, with the Western Union or Chase Bank or whatever, there you are actually taking money. You're depositing it into this bank who then – we'll send it on to the third party, but in the process, they take a service fee or whatever, usually, unless you have some kind of special relationship with them. And they act, so they're an intermediary, whereas Bitcoin would be more similar to us being in person, and you're just handing me $5 for my widget.
Right. The large companies are trusted intermediaries, and it's worked really well for the last 500 or 600 years of civilization, maybe even longer. But what's happening now is the protocol, the internet communication between other machines, that's the trusted intermediary.
Okay.
You don't need another company like Equifax or MasterCard to do that for you.
Okay. So you're eliminating the middleman, I guess.
And we become the bank. We become the currency. We transact between each other without the need of somebody else to do it for us.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. I'm slightly confused, but I'm still hanging in there. I'm still hanging in there. And I hope you are as well, listeners. So please stay tuned for our continued conversation about Bitcoin and other financial challenges and inventions and things that are going to be affecting our current economic system. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am really thrilled today to be joined by Bill Ulivieri, who is the, are you the president, CEO? What's your title?
Owner.
Owner of Senecal Capital Management, which is an investment company in Glenview, Illinois. Bill is regularly consulted by Catholic media and other media because of his expertise from a Catholic perspective on investment issues and financial issues and the markets and things that, well, some of us don't have really great understanding of it, nonetheless affect our lives every single day. And that's kind of the scary part of all this, right? Because this is, you know, it's like the internet. You know, if you know what it is and it impacts your life in so many different ways. If it didn't exist, you know, your life would change very dramatically. So we're talking today about sort of a new, invention, is that the right word to call it, in the financial markets,
sure.
In the financial system, called Bitcoin. And so Bill was starting to describe to us what Bitcoin is, and he gave us a terrific working definition that even I could understand. So, you know, I think, listeners, that's probably a good way to gauge it, if how this is going. But, Bill, what more can you tell us just in order to
sure.
give us kind of that understanding?
And again, Mary, I just want to make sure that you understand this technology is very new. It is yet to be fully developed and fully mature.
Okay.
So when we were learning what the internet was and what email was back
right.
in 1992 or 1993, I remember asking my mom if she would get an AOL account so
okay.
I could send her email.
Uh-huh.
She goes, well, what are you going to do with email? I said, well, I'm going to send you a letter.
Uh-huh.
She's like, well, why don't you just mail me a letter in the post office? I said, well, I want to send it to you because it's cool and I can send it to you and you receive it just in a few minutes.
Right.
She said, well, what do you have to say to me that's so important that you need to send an email?
Oh, that's good.
And like technology, it's new and we adapt. And you will see that Bitcoin will play a much greater role in our lives going forward in other derivatives like Bitcoin. So you have to think of it really as an open accounting system. It's like QuickBooks Online.
Okay.
Rather than it being centralized on one local computer or at a database, the system is verified by thousands of computers all over the world together to track the ownership of a digital token. So Bitcoin does not exist in physical form.
Right.
It's really an accounting ledger. It's
right.
a record on a database that accredits your account and debits mine.
Okay.
All right. And that's how they keep track of the Bitcoins.
Okay.
So when you send someone a Bitcoin, if I were to send it to you for that little widget that we discussed in the last segment, the transaction that I gave you $5 of Bitcoin for this widget. The second I hit send, that transaction is broadcast over this broad global computer network.
Okay.
And that's how it's verified. That's how it's recorded on what's called the blockchain. So blockchain and Bitcoin are two pieces of technology that work with each other.
Okay.
So that's how the transaction is recorded.
Okay.
Now, normally, we would use a bank for that. The
right.
bank would be the one responsible for debiting my account or crediting yours. It's the bank that's responsible for the merchant-customer-client relationship. But there's a lot of cost involved. There's a lot of inefficiencies. Money doesn't flow as quickly around the world as it does, say, email or text messaging.
Okay.
And that's what Bitcoin is. It's this new generation, this new revelation, this new evolution of sending money.
Okay.
And so most currencies, like the U.S. dollar, the Chinese yuan, the British pound, the euro
right.
dollar, there's a central authority. It's a nation state. It's
okay.
it's a country that's in charge of managing that money supply.
So is that like in the United States, the Federal Reserve? Is that
yes.
what? Okay.
Yes. The United States government, the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve, they're responsible for managing our money supply and managing the integrity of our currency. But Bitcoin, there is no central authority.
Okay.
It's just a team of volunteers and computers all over the world that are keeping track of the buys and sells and the debits and credits and ledgers.
Okay.
And that's what Bitcoin really is. So, Mary, when you have a photo when you are using an electronic medium like an MP3 or MP4 file or a JPEG file. The thing with the digital world that we've lived in with email is that you can make an infinite number of copies of a piece of digital information and send it to anybody in the world. There's mm-hmm. no scarcity with a picture, a selfie with us on Facebook.
Right.
But what Bitcoin did is because of its unique technology, it creates digital scarcity. There's only 21 available Bitcoins, and I put that in quotation marks.
Okay.
Because Bitcoin, the way it updates the ledger, this accounting ledger of debits and credits, okay. it takes it away from me and it gives it to you, just like it was a dollar bill. If I were to hand you right now across this table a $10 bill,
right.
you would have it and I wouldn't. That's called the double entry ledger problem that people involved with digital currency were trying to grasp. How do you do that without the need of a bank? And that's really what Bitcoin is. Think of it as this massive accounting system
okay.
that exists in the cloud, in this mysterious cloud
right.
of computers
right.
that doesn't need a bank to update the transaction between two people.
Okay, so there's a limit on the number of Bitcoins that exist in the world currently.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm going to just blow your mind one more time.
All right.
And Bitcoin isn't the only digital currency. All right.
No.
There's actually 1,300 digital currencies that currently exist, each one with its own attribute, each one with its own style. So Bitcoin is just the one with brand recognition. Bitcoin is the first one out of the gate. And so what we're seeing now is money has become programmable. Money becomes, if Bitcoin has done anything, Mary, it's really opened up the conversation as what is money?
Right.
What's the value of the U.S. dollar?
Like, this is like going back to wampum conversation.
It really is.
I know from, like, the invention of money, seriously. So this is interesting. And so all right, who is responsible for Bitcoin? Who invented it, if that's the right word?
Well, it was a team of people worked on a project together roughly at the height of the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009.
Okay.
The person that we give recognition to is a gentleman or a person or persons named Satoshi Nakamoto.
All right.
It's sort of an anonymous user. It doesn't matter who it is. Because the technology is open, it's available to anybody, and they were the one that first proposed that they invented a peer-to-peer, in other words, a person-to-person digital currency that updates in real time
okay.
and uses math-based cryptography in order to guarantee, like give each transaction a password. And so the first Bitcoin transaction happened roughly in January of 2009. It stayed relatively dormant for a few years as it was just really embraced by a bunch of geeks mm-hmm. and guys wearing hoodies in their basement drinking Monster energy drink all night long,
okay.
right? And then what happened was in 2011, 2012, Julian Assange,
right.
WikiLeaks.
Right.
The banking system and the world leaders got together that denied him the money to live. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but they shut down his checking account. They closed down PayPal account donations to
right,
WikiLeaks.
I remember that. Right.
So what happened was because Bitcoin doesn't need permission, it's not owned by anybody.
Right. People and it's not regulated.
It's not regulated.
It?
No. Okay. People were able to send him Bitcoins rather than U.S. dollars or British pounds.
Okay. But how does he? So, all right. So say, I'm Julian Assange and mm-hmm. I'm holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy and how would I then, and I want to get a loaf of bread with my mm-hmm. Bitcoin. How do I do that I can't go to the grocery store with a Bitcoin.
True. But currently there are 100,000 vendors across the world that accept Bitcoin as payment.
Okay.
Overstock.com, Best
really?
Buy in some cases, Microsoft,
oh, no kidding.
Intel, Expedia. So little by little, and what you'll see going forward is when you make a donation to a charitable organization or when you buy something, it's Visa, MasterCard, American Express, PayPal, and then you're going to see Bitcoin pretty soon.
Mm.
And as it becomes more popular and more people use it, it will you'll see it flourish as a payment system.
Okay, so two questions: mm-hmm. What are the benefits other than not having to pay service fees
mm-hmm.
For someone using Bitcoin? Is it safer? Is it is it more reliable?
Mm-hmm.
Is it A, so that's, what are the benefits to an average person, mm-hmm. not someone who's in the kind of finance world like you are, but just, your average person. And then Secondly, how does one purchase a Bitcoin? How does one get into this market?
Okay, so why should people care about Bitcoin? Well, if anybody has ever had to deposit a check and not have your funds available for about 3 days,
that happened to me last week, and okay. I tell you, no. And anyway, and the bank held the funds for, even though it was from a major bank and reputable, you know, for like two, it was almost 3 days before I could access those funds.
So Bitcoin is going to completely change, innovate, and disrupt that time period. There's no reason why we need to wait 3 days for a check to clear.
Right.
There's no reason why we need to, when we sell stocks in our 401k or in our investment account, there's a settlement of trade plus 3 days in order for these trades to settle. What has to settle? Does the stock certificate really exist anymore? Do you have to send a check in the mail to the person that you're buying the stocks from? No. If you're an international business, if you do business anywhere in the world, even, you know, coast to coast, there's friction, there's delay, there's time to take money from one place to the other.
Okay.
It isn't like when you send money to China, they're actually wrapping it up in paper bags or plastic bags and putting it on a ship and going over there. Money gets transferred almost instantaneously. So why do we have to wait?
Right.
All right.
So this will eliminate waiting
time.
It's instantaneous.
Yes. It's a near instantaneous, low friction way of sending money anywhere.
And when you say low friction, what does that, and again, I'm just trying to make this kind of information accessible to people like me who don't have a whole lot of financial training. What does that mean? It's low involvement of other financial institutions?
Yes.
That's what that means.
It means a few things. One is that there's going to be three, four, or even five intermediaries that no longer take a little piece of the action when the London Stock Exchange sends me money. Or if you're a manufacturing firm and you send goods overseas, you don't have to do these hops of three or four or five different intermediaries to guarantee to be the trusted party. That's not necessary anymore. You can send money directly from one person to the next. So when you send $100 from point A to point B, you're going to about have $100 on the other side.
Right.
Where with Western Union, the fees can be between 4 and 20%.
Okay. All right. Okay, listeners, hang with us. We're going to continue this really, I mean, a little bit complicated, but fascinating conversation about Bitcoin and blockchain with Bill Ulivieri. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you have loved ones who are away from the church? Do you feel helpless, anxious, or concerned because people you love no longer consider themselves Catholic? My name is Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. I am a religious sister with the Daughters of St. Paul, but I am also a former atheist. I was raised Catholic but rejected my faith for over 10 years. Evangelizing our friends and family is the most difficult kind of evangelization, but it is possible. I have written a book called The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, to help you invite your loved ones back to the church. You can find more information about this book at pauline.org/prodigalyoulove. Together, let's start an evangelization revolution.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And my guest today is Bill Ulivieri, who is the owner of Senecal Capital Management, which is an investment firm located in Glenview, Illinois. And Bill is an expert not only in this whole area of investing and finance, but he's also an expert on how it impacts us as Catholics and how the church's teachings on how we use money, because, yes, the church does have teachings on that, and the best way to use it and our what we give back to God and the responsible use of our funds and the gifts that God has given us. Bill really brings a very Catholic and Christian perspective to all of the work that he does. So we're spending this hour Bill is trying to very patiently help me understand Bitcoin and blockchain. Bill is laughing, yes, because I warned you in advance, though. I said this is like going to be like talking to a fifth grader, which Bill has found to be true. Okay, so we are back. And so, Bill, we were using my example of Mary has a widget that she wants to sell to Bill.
Yes.
And so Mary has decided she no longer wants to use cash because it has a lot of germs. And Chase Bank would take 50 cents off the top, right, if I wanted to sell that to you. So how does Mary use a Bitcoin to pay you? Or for you to pay me, rather, for my widget.
And that's a great, I'll give you a quick example. But really, I want to make sure that we step outside ourselves, outside of the United States, because this is where the change is going to be most profound, Mary.
Interesting. Okay.
Right. So right now, if I opened up a checking account recently in the last 6 months, and it took me about 90 minutes with a bank that I've already been doing business with for about 30 years. So I had to supply my name, address, Social Security number.
Right.
I had to sign a Bank Secrecy Act, an anti-money laundering. I had to vouch that I wasn't using it for illegal means.
Right.
I had to give them a copy of my driver's license, both front and back, and answer dozens of questions.
Okay.
With Bitcoin, you could actually download an app on your phone right now, and within 5 minutes, I could send you Bitcoin. You can participate in an economic transaction without the need of a bank a lot faster than it would take to open a checking account, because the bank is the trusted party that is going to secure and provide the trust part of your money exchanges. Bitcoin doesn't need that because it has all these volunteers on a network. But let's just step outside of ourselves.
Okay.
Right. So the thing that I find most exciting about Bitcoin is the social justice aspect, this economic inclusion. So of the 7 billion people on the planet, maybe 2.5 to 3 billion don't have access to a bank. They don't have access to their own identity. They can't prove that they own the property that's been in the family for generations.
Okay.
So Bitcoin doesn't care if you're a woman from Afghanistan or Pakistan. Bitcoin doesn't care what your race, your religion, your color, your political affiliation, what age you are, what caste system you are from in India. It doesn't care what your location is or your gender. It doesn't care whether you're one of Mother Teresa's untouchables. You see, in our world, in the United States, almost anybody can walk into a bank and, for the most part, open up a bank account.
Right.
But you can't say
that.
But
not everyone.
Not everyone.
No.
But most everyone can. In the rest of the world, first of all, you're geographically undesirable to even reach 200 miles to get to your local bank. There's not enough money in it for your average bank to set up an outlet or a branch that you and I are familiar with. And if you are in a if you are a woman, you can't own a checking account. You can't have a bank account. It's in your brother or your husband's or your father's name.
Right.
You're completely excluded from transacting economically without the permission of somebody else.
Okay.
So this woman, say, for example, rather than you being in Chicago, you're in Afghanistan. You can accept electronic payment with Bitcoin, and you don't need a bank. I can be a tourist walking down through the streets of somewhere in Afghanistan, and I could buy your hardware. I mean, I could buy your gifts, your trinkets, your spices, your food, anything you make, and I can send you Bitcoin. And eventually, that Bitcoin can be sent overseas to China and take delivery of the parts that you need.
Right.
So again, it's still very new. But for example, in Kenya, 75% of the economic activity, the transactions that go on between two people, happen on a cell phone that you and I would have thrown away about 20 years ago.
Wow. Like a flip phone.
It's like a flip phone.
Yeah.
It's a feature phone. It costs maybe $20 or $30.
Okay.
And honestly, we threw these in the recycling bin years ago.
Right.
Yet for the Kenyan businessman, for the Kenyan farmer, to be able to transact using electronic currency rather than sheep, chickens, goats, eggs, or grain, or whatever it is that their produce is, this is a huge leapfrog over the traditional banking system that allows the entire country to participate electronically using a digital currency. Now, they don't have a bank account. It's kind of like the company is called M-Pesa.
Uh-huh.
M-Pesa is kind of like Vodafone or Verizon.
Okay.
It's the telecommunication company actually is kind of like the de facto bank.
Okay.
They're the ones that are processing all these transactions. Now, yes, there's a bank somewhere way, way, way in the backside. But you don't need to walk into a bank to transact.
Okay.
You might not have clean water. You may not have food. But you'll have a phone and a charger that will allow you to do business that elevates economic inclusion, that helps elevate your standard of living to a degree that we've never seen before.
Okay. So this provides entryway access to people who would not normally have the means,
yes,
to be able to, you know, to transact. So say, you know, for example, I'm trying to think of, you know, women in South America who would, you know, weave very beautiful blankets. And in order to sell those in the market, they would have to go. And this way, they have an entry point into a means of transacting business with,
yes,
people,
yes,
you know, in the next country, much less the next town. So,
in our own currency, really isn't good for anything outside of the United States.
Right.
Just so
tell me how that would be reflective of Catholic Church teaching on economic justice.
I think it all boils down to solidarity. I mean, all you have to do is read Pope Pope Francis Laudato Si.
Right.
Right. Benedict and I'm sorry, the name escapes me now.
Okay.
Charity and Love. It's Caritas and Veritate.
Right.
So you can see that they don't really have this fond affection for the banking system.
Okay.
They see speculation. They see that the banking system really is designed to help those that are well-to-do and well-off rather than providing loans and easy access to capital that people need to build up their family and protect,
okay,
themselves and get a meal on the table.
Right.
So you can see that from a Catholic solidarity standpoint, we're able to transact economically with almost anybody on the planet with a new global currency that no one is in control of.
And that everyone has access to.
And everybody has access to.
Well, what about then the potential for fraud? Doesn't that, if there is no regulatory body,
mm-hmm,
and anybody can access it, does that open up? I mean, I'm just trying to think,
yes,
of the different ways, like, for example, before 9/11, when, mm-hmm, there were huge amounts of cash that were going back and forth between, you know, caves in Afghanistan and,
yes,
Florida and New York, you know, for the planes and everything. Does Bitcoin not give potential then to people who want to do bad things
fraud? Just like U.S. dollars is the world's reserve currency, and many bad people are doing horrible things with that. So
okay,
the money itself is relatively, in my opinion, inert morally, right? There's no,
right,
but it's what you do with it. The same U.S. dollar that funds this wonderful organization and funds the Catholic Church and funds missions all over the world is the same U.S. dollar that is used to fund terrorism and the drug trade and sex trafficking.
Okay.
So
it's
the person does with the Bitcoin.
Right. So it's the instrument of,
yes,
evil rather than it being,
yes,
you know, yeah, you have to. But
in terms of fraud,
that would be a concern for me.
The only aspect for fraud right now is the application that you would download onto your phone in order to participate in the Bitcoin network. That's where there could be a potential for fraud. If you lose your password and your username, then potentially somebody could grab your Bitcoins. But the thing with Bitcoin is that, again, it's verified and it's secured by very high-level military-grade cryptography. It's encrypted. So the Bitcoin network has never been hacked. Bitcoins can't be stolen out of the ledger. The only central point of attack is the actual user.
Okay.
So if someone were to put a gun to your head and say, give me your cell phone or I want your Bitcoins, that's it. That's a problem. That's an issue. But other than that, it's a completely free, secure, military-encrypted digital currency that really will be a global currency that you don't need to exchange through a foreign currency desk.
So tell me, now we mentioned earlier in the interview, I misheard you, I thought you said there were 21 Bitcoin, but there's actually 21 million listeners.
21 million
and
Bitcoins.
I was trying to figure out, gosh, there's only 21 of these and we're making this work somehow. No, but there are 21 million. Are they, are there serial numbers on them? So are each one of them unique? And can you trace the use of a Bitcoin from person to person? So if I sell,
yes,
you my widget, Will there be a mark on it somehow that said, like getting out a library book and you can look back in the, you know, and see, oh, Bill took that book out 10 years ago. Is there a way to trace who has touched, quote unquote, a Bitcoin?
Yes and no. And I'll say, so the part of the Bitcoin is that it's open, it's transparent. There is a website you can go to right now and you can see every single transaction that happens on the Bitcoin network.
Okay.
And it contains some interesting data. It contains the, like the buyer, the seller, a transaction fee, and a little bit other information that you probably would be hard to decipher because it's all encrypted.
Okay.
But the transaction is visible to anybody all over the world, although the users themselves, their identity remains anonymous.
Okay.
Like, why do I have to punch in my, why do I have to use my four-digit social security number when I'm on customer service with somebody, right? Why do I need to put in my zip code when I use my credit card at the gas station? Why do I have to provide all this personal information when I use an electronic money as it is now, like a debit card? Bitcoin separates that. You don't need a person's identity in order to use Bitcoin. I can just use the digital currency. So Bitcoin is very secure. It's open. It's public. It's transparent. It's relatively anonymous, not perfectly anonymous. And that's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah.
And I can see your eyes are glazing
well,
over.
No, well, you know what? And that's good because we're going to go to a break now and I will revive myself when we come back, because there's a couple of questions I just want to I'd like to flesh out a little bit practically how why people should care about Bitcoin, because I you know, I'd like to help our listeners understand, you know, why they should have a working knowledge of this and how it's going to impact them. So this is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. Is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, two blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have been joined today by Bill Ulivieri, who is the owner of Cynical Capital Management in Glenview, Illinois. He advises from a Catholic perspective, but also from a secular one, on investments and financial markets and those kind of things that affect our lives, whether or not we want them to. And we have spent such an interesting conversation today, spent the last 45 minutes talking about Bitcoin and blockchain, which is a new sort of form of currency. And when I invited Bill to come and join me today to talk about this, I had been seeing stories, you know, in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the other big, you know, cranes, the other big financial papers about Bitcoin and how it was going to impact the global economy. And in my mind, this was some kind of new fancy thing that rich people were going to use to get richer. But Bill, you have really opened my eyes to the fact that it is actually providing for people who would never have access to a bank or to financial, you know, freedom in a way in third world countries in particular. that it provides them an entryway into the world of finance. So
yes.
let's talk a little bit more about that, because I just find that piece of it very encouraging, first of all, but also it was so interesting.
Well, there's so many different ways to play this, Mary, and I think that's what we just need to keep our eyes open and our mind open, because the reason why I can't transact to, you know, certain parts of Africa or South America, it's because they don't have a good banking system. There's no way of sending it quickly. So, for example, and I don't want you to think that Bitcoin is the one and only digital currency. There will be tens of thousands of digital currencies in the future.
Yeah, like this isn't like the internet, for example.
It's just the first iteration. So, if I were to send money to, say, for example, I had family in the Philippines and I wanted to send them $100 a month. Well, if I used Western Union or I used other payment companies, they would transact of the $100, maybe between $7 and $30 would come out of that payment by the time it had arrived at its destination.
Okay.
That is a huge amount of money. You can feed a family for over a week in the Philippines for $30.
Right. Wow.
If you were going to do a water well project, or if I wanted to lend money to a farmer in Africa, see, I don't need to support African farmers by buying goods at coffee shops or at Whole Foods or whatever.
Right, right.
I could send
a $30 bar of soap. Yeah, with an elephant on it.
So I'll be able to send money to a Kenyan farmer instantaneously from our chair right here. I can send him a $6 micro lend.
Right.
I can send him $10 because
no service fees.
With virtually none.
Okay.
So it's not that if I send him 10, he gets 3.
Okay.
If I send him 10, he gets 9.998.
Okay.
All right. And it might not seem like a big deal to us, but $10 goes a long way in third world countries.
Sure.
Okay. And it's a way of being able to lend money. It provides a medium for people like who are well off in the United States and other first world countries to be able to do micro lending, micro payments
directly
to the person who needs it without having to flush through a half a dozen foreign exchange banks or the monetary system. In Venezuela, they're smuggling in Bitcoin machines just to make a few extra dollars in order to survive, to pay for medication, because the political system is so corrupt. A banana costs like $19.
Right.
They're using Bitcoin to buy goods using the Amazon pantry, having them delivered to the Venezuelan border and then smuggled in. So you can see that a currency doesn't always work. We have it made here. It's not like that in many parts of the world.
Well, you know, as you were saying that in my former job, when I worked for the Catholic Church, part of my job responsibilities were to occasionally send money to poor bishops and poor dioceses who might need it for a particular need. And in some countries, Tamil Nadu and in India, for example, you couldn't even send something like a check through the mail because the fraud and the corruption and the even within the banking system. So what we would have to do, we would have to transfer something electronically to the Vatican embassy in that country, who would then send a priest courier with it to whatever bishop or missionary needed
it. The cash in the satchel?
Yep. This is what we had to do because we would say, oh, we'll just try and transfer something. They'd say, no, you can't do that. We'll never get it. We'll never see it. You don't understand.
That goes away now. You can see that's the friction I'm talking about. You can instantaneously, from your desk, send any donation to that bishop, and he'll get it in less than 10 minutes.
Right. And he'll get it directly.
He'll get it directly.
There's no way anyone can intercept it.
Nope.
Unless, and you can do this, as you said, using cell phones that, like, my kids play with now, right, as toys because they're so bad and old.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it on the most simple of electronic phone devices.
And because the money really isn't on your phone, so if you lose your phone, you don't lose your money. The money, the record of the transaction that you sent to this bishop is on this Bitcoin network. All the spread so thin across the globe that nobody can interfere with it. Nobody can change it. Nobody can censor it. So if the bishop loses his phone, if he drops it into a lake, if it gets stolen, he can re-energize. He can reclaim those assets because they are not in one physical location. They're validated by this global world group of volunteers.
Okay.
So it's he won't Unless he forgets his password.
Right. Well, you know, now you and I were talking about, you had a very moving story that you were sharing with me at the break, Bill, about women in particularly Muslim countries who, when their husbands divorce them, will sometimes have acid thrown onto their faces to mark them so that no other man will then, you know, take them under his care. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that was a particularly compelling example of how Bitcoin can help a woman like that.
Yes, I watched this documentary when I was overseas, and it really talked about that story where many women were being dismissed by their husbands. The rite of divorce really was to throw a pot of boiling battery acid on their face,
wow.
right? And so the story was how a plastic surgeon was restoring these women's physical features through plastic surgery.
Okay.
But my heart broke when I was watching this documentary, because if you could see how vulnerable these women are, they have no social standing, they have no economic standing, they're completely at the mercy of the husband who just threw battery acid on their face.
Right, so they live like in a hut.
They live in a hut.
They're just...
And the husband will still want conjugal relationships with her, yet he's the one that divorced her and...
Right, but he owns her basically like...
She's
like a slave.
She's treated worse than the dog.
Yeah.
So here, I know this is optimistic, but it is possible for a woman like that to actually participate in an economic activity because she doesn't need her husband. She doesn't need his permission. It's completely free way of transacting economically. She could actually have food and clothing and participate for and help her children and kind of get herself out of that. It's possible now where it was never possible before.
Wow.
And I'm not saying that there's thousands of women doing it. I'm just saying that the potential now exists for the lowest of the low, the poorest of the poor, the most downtrodden person to potentially transact and participate in a global economy. Global economy.
Right. So she would have access to economic freedom.
Yes. And for the first time in history.
Yes. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, the potential that so let's just kind of if we could just bring it back. And that's a beautifully compelling, I think, argument for something like Bitcoin.
Yes.
I mean, how brilliant. I'm so glad I brought you in today, because I had such misinformation in my own head about what it was and how it was used. So say, you know, we're John and Jane, and we live, you know, in the Midway Park area of Chicago, and we want to start using Bitcoin. They've heard this show today. They're thrilled. They want to support it. They want to be part of this. They don't like the fees their bank is charging them. How does one get involved? So you mentioned you have a cell phone, you download this app.
Yes, you download.
How much does it depend? Like, I'm going to buy a $10 Bitcoin. Do you decide what you buy?
You can decide what you want to buy. You can buy $10, $20. Now, Bitcoin has been so popular over the last few weeks that the transaction fees are a little bit higher now than they were, say, a year or two ago.
Okay.
So I wouldn't necessarily recommend this immediate investment or this immediate participation in using a few. There's some apps that are very, very low cost, but the ones that are very popular right now called Coinbase.
Okay.
Coinbase is a entryway. It's a place where you log in and you set up an account and you connect it to your checking account. You connect it to a credit card, and it allows you to buy Bitcoin using their app, their application.
Okay.
But there are other companies. You can go do a Google search for Bitcoin ATM machines. You feed in dollar bills, and out comes Bitcoin onto your phone. And it sends it to you like using a QR code, like those little square codes that you see at the grocery store.
Okay.
You can meet somebody on Craigslist in a public place like a coffee shop, and you give him cash. They give you Bitcoins.
So that could eliminate, you know, some of those things that you hear about with Craigslist, that there's theft. And there's, if you have Bitcoins, if you do your transaction only by Bitcoin, it eliminates that theft potential, doesn't
theoretically
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you had a QR code, you had your Bitcoin address on your website or on your Facebook account, people from all over the globe could send you donations, because I'm sure they're downloading and listening to your podcasts using streaming or iTunes or
I'm hoping so. I sure hope they're listening. Well, Bill, this has been just a fascinating conversation. If someone wants to learn more about you and your company, where do they go?
They can go to www.senecalcapital.com.
Okay, Senecal with a C.
Yes,
Senecal Capital Management. Bill Ulivieri, thank you so much. This hour has sped by.
We'll do it again.
Yes, we will. Okay, God bless you. And listeners, have a blessed Christmas and a very happy, healthy, and prosperous 2018. This has been Mary Fiorito on Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say when right from wrong has become so unknown?